One of the things about Christianity that I seemed to pick up when I was a child is that this whole way of being submissive, if someone is having a go at you, you're not to stand your ground. You're not to retaliate. You're not to fight back. You are to take it. And that's the Christian way. So if someone strikes you on the right cheek, well, turn the other cheek. I mean, how many times did your mother say to you, well, Richard, just turn the other cheek? And you're like, oh my gosh, what does that kind of mean? Philip, do you want to be a volunteer for a cheek slapping demonstration? So in that world, if there was a master who was striking the slave, that was the usual situation. The way that you would strike someone was a backhanded slap. Yes, remember those days when you could actually make physical contact with people? Oh, those were the days. No. So if Philip is to now turn his cheek, I can't hit him using the backhanded slap anymore. So now I have to hit him with the front-handed slap. Now, the thing about the front-handed slap rather than the backhanded slap, this is the way of submission. But if I was to hit someone with the front slap, I'm no longer in master and slave mode or mentality. I'm now treating Philip as an equal member of the human race, amazing as it might seem. That sense that it's a call to equal. It's a call to say, no, you can hit me, but I will not be as a slave to you anymore. You can hit me only if you acknowledge that I am equal to you, that I share the same dignity as you. Isn't that different to just turn the other cheek and take some more submissiveness, become the doormat, let people wipe their feet all over you? You've heard how it was said, if someone takes you to court and wants to take the cloak from you, well, let them have your tunic as well. Now, in those days, most people only had two items of clothing. So if they're suing to take your first item of clothing and Jesus says, well, take off the second one as well, I would be standing here pretty vulnerable right now if everything I own has been handed over to you. So that sense of being shamed by my nakedness. So I will be shamed. Of course, I'm standing naked before you, and that's not something most of you wanted to contemplate. But also, the person who is forcing you to get rid of everything that you have, the items that will keep you warm at night, everything that you use as a bedroll to sleep on, all of that will also shame the other person. So this thing of being submissive is not at the heart of it. If someone causes you to walk 1 mile, as the Roman soldiers were allowed to do, and so if you had something to carry, the Romans could get you to carry it, but for a mile and no more. And if you then grabbed the item and continued walking for another mile, it wasn't the person who was carrying it who would get in trouble, it would be the Roman soldier, because they were very strictly prohibited from doing more than what the law allowed. And so you're actually causing the soldier to get in trouble for doing what they're forcing you. And so all of these are ways of nonviolent resistance. All of these are ways of turning on their very essence, on turning on their head, all of these ways. Because Jesus knows the tendency for violence to escalate, that it will continue to grow out of hand. And so that law that he quotes from, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that was what's called the lex talionis. It was the law that was meant to limit violence. So if someone did something to you, if someone took out your eye, you could retaliate, but no more than taking out their eye. If someone took out your eye, you couldn't chop off their head. You couldn't chop off two limbs. You had to be proportionate and measured. But Jesus is here taking what was already there as a way to contain violence, and he's saying, we can do better than this. We can extend this. We can offer a way that rather than the violence tending to escalate and spiral out of control, it's a way that offers this transformation. So I say to you, do not just love your neighbor and hate your enemy, which the law actually doesn't say. We heard it quoted from the book of Leviticus today. The first part is there. The second part isn't anywhere in the Hebrew Bible. But it was the way that they understood it and interpreted. But Jesus says, don't just love your neighbor and love your enemy, but also pray for them. Wish them the very best. I mean, imagine if someone is just the point of absolute disturbance for you and they continue to criticize you and attack you. I know that most of us, thankfully, haven't had this as a regular experience, or perhaps we have. Imagine the annoyance that you would have, or that you would cause in the other person, you know, if they're constantly belittling you, constantly criticizing you. And every time you respond by saying, well, God bless you. And I pray for you, and I may the Lord continue to enrich you with his mercy and experience. There's probably nothing more annoying than someone who prays for one of their persecutors. And so Jesus is offering us this path of transformation, this path of change. And how is he understanding all this? Simply because of his prayer with the Father. He's seen the Father, he's seen the heart of God. And through his prayer, through his encounter with the Lord, through his experience of dealing with his silly and faithless disciples, he's seen what is necessary. He's seen the transformation that is possible when the Father's heart actually begins to change and transform our own. So this invitation is for us to also be changed. Just as the Father does this, so also Jesus does this. And Jesus invites us to do the same. The final line of the gospel today can often feel really weird and really strange. Matthew 5:48, be perfect, therefore, just as your Father is perfect. And we think, Jesus, have you actually seen me? Have you seen the kind of character that I have? Do you think that I can possibly be perfect? How could that possibly happen? But the Greek word is actually teleos. It's that sense of being oriented towards the end. Teleology is the study of those things and how it concludes. So teleos is that sense of, well, what is our direction? What is our orientation? What is the way that I move towards? When I was a child, I grew up on the farm, and the house was down off the road a bit. And so we had to mow the front section of the lawn, and it was several acres, so it was pretty substantial. And so a lot of the time we just mowed a path from the house up to the road. And if when I was doing that mowing, I was kind of caught up and distracted in my thoughts, as I often am, you know, I'm just thinking about where I'm mowing right at this moment, the path is going to go all over the place. What we need is to be able to have a focal point. And thankfully there was a water tank on top of the hill. And so if I looked at that water tank as I did the mowing, I kept my eye focused on that tank, then that mowing path would be sure and straight and true, because we had that direction, we had that orientation towards the tank, but towards goodness and holiness. If we continue to look at the Father, if we continue to see the way that Jesus has loved us and continues to call us to love, then slowly our hearts will be changed, because that desire for our teleos to be perfect will change and form and shape us. So today we're invited to offer ourselves into the perfection of God. I'm not saying that we're going to claim it and achieve it, but at least having that as our desire, our direction, the focus of our lives. Let's indeed pray for one another. Pray that we will be changed and slowly transformed to be more like the heart of the Father.